Okay, everyone. Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, June 14th, 2017, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly Lunch and Learn. We are live on Facebook, and we'll start by handing out some material here. I have some pictures. We're going to be looking at some pictures today. I'm sorry that I don't have them available for you on Facebook. Is there a way for me to solve that problem?
Put them up like that. Here.
Here are the pictures for those of you looking.
There you go, see?
Okay. So, and also I want to hand out this packet for you. Could I just have the extra pictures back?
Sure.
Please. Okay.
Hi,
Elisheva. Shalom. Okay, so what I want to do today, and I want to begin by thanking Al HaTorah, a wonderful website that has a number of shiurim, specifically that look at the way various episodes in the Torah are depicted in classical works of art. And it gives us an opportunity to see how these pictures match up to the account in the Torah. And it's an interesting way to study the text of the Torah. So in terms of where we're going to be looking, we are going to be looking in Parshat Shlach, which begins on page 311 in the Tanakh. If you have a different Tanakh at home, it is Bamidbar Perek Yud Gimel, Numbers chapter 13. And this is the Parsha of the Miraglim, right? The Parsha of the scouts or the spies that went to check out Eretz Yisrael in advance of B'nai Yisrael's arrival. So we have these two works of art, and I'll tell you a little bit about them. One of them is by Gustav Doré, who lived from 1832 to 1883. That's the one on the left of the picture. And he was a French artist. And then on the right, we have Giovanni Lanfranco, who lived from 1582 to 1647, was an Italian Baroque-style artist. And this picture on the right was originally hung in the church San Paolo Fiori Lemura in Rome, and now is in the Getty Center in Los Angeles, the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. So next time you're there, you can check it out. Okay? So we're going to look at a number of aspects of each painting to see how they correspond to the actual verses in the Torah in terms of what happened with the Miraglim. Okay? So let's just start by looking at the picture and seeing what contrasting elements we can see between the various pictures. Differences. Can you spot 10 differences? I don't know if there are 10, but what are the differences? So go ahead. Just go ahead. Shout them out.
Moshe is here. There's no Moshe in the other one.
So on the one on the right, right? On the one on the right, it seems like the Miraglim are presenting something to Moshe, who is holding his hand up, and he has some sort of scepter in his hand. And on the left, it's unclear, correct? It's unclear where or if Moshe is even in the picture. Maybe he's the one pointing at the Miraglim, maybe not. But it seems much clearer on the right that Moshe is there. True. Okay. Along the
Which
same.
Which one is Moshe?
It seems like on the right, the person with his hand up.
With the scepter.
That one that is the lower figure.
On the right. Standing up with the scepter.
With the scepter. Right here.
There.
Makel.
Makel.
Yeah. Okay. That seems like that's Moshe. Okay. Good. That's.
See an aura here.
Yeah. I was wondering about that too. I think it's supposed to be clouds. I don't think it's supposed to be horns. But it also.
Looks like a horn.
It also. I also noticed
that. No, horns are on Har Sinai.
Yeah.
I think that the atmosphere is different.
Mm-hmm.
Here we
go ahead.
See more, I think, joyous.
Right. On the left,
other one,
right.
A little bit desperation.
Excellent, excellent. On the left side, you have the Miraglim, presumably coming back,
the
and sort of right. They are
gross.
They are joyously and almost victoriously right, holding up the grapes. Right. For those of you on Facebook, you could see that.
That's the one on the
right,
left.
On the left, and then on the right, they're one of them is down on their knees and they're bent over and their look, their expression is very serious. Right, so that's a good question. What happened? What which is the real story? The one on the left, where they seem to be excited and they're holding it up, like "Look, everyone, look what we have," or on the one on the left, or the one on the right, where the mood definitely seems to be scared. I think is a good word. Concerned, panicked. Yeah, excellent. Oh, so that would be some other fruit. They didn't only
olive
bring
oil.
Back grape. They brought back other fruits as well. We're going to get to that. That's an excellent, another excellent point.
It's also how you look at it. They're looking at it as a good thing. They came back and they found a land that had a lot of milk and honey or whatever. And the other ones were not so sure. They're not sure.
So the question is, which one depicts the real events of the Parsha? We have to read. We have to read the verses.
The cup is half full or half empty.
We have to read the verses.
Seems to me that on the left,
yeah,
two people holding it up are Yehoshua and Caleb, a guy, people who said, this is great. Let's go for it.
Okay.
If you look to their left, those guys, that they have more food, but their heads are bent down.
Okay.
They're not victorious.
So maybe on the left, there are two moods expressed. Okay, good.
But I would think it's in the right, it's more spiritual. Where on the left, it's more down to earth.
Okay, could be. There's another very important difference here.
What? On the right, it's just a few people.
Right.
On the left, there's a whole tribe of
people. On the left, it looks like whatever they're doing, whatever they're saying, whatever they're showing it to everyone.
Right.
All of Bnei Yisrael. Right, presumably that's who's represented by the large crowd in the background.
Right.
Right? While in the picture on the right, it seems like the Miraglim are giving their report only to Moshe.
Yeah, those people on the bottom are wearing this war gear.
Right, the armor.
Yeah, like
good,
armor,
right?
Right,
good. Right, there's armor and there's no armor, right? Okay.
There are some people in the back.
Yeah,
but
it's a
very skin.
But
right. Okay, good. So these are made. Let's just review them. Some of the major differences are that on the left, the report seems to be being given to all of Bnei Yisrael, and on the right, the only one that's being addressed is Moshe, or presumably that's Moshe. On the left, there seems to be a degree of joy, at least for the people holding up that big cluster of grapes, while on the right, there seems to be more concern. Or angst, right? That's
but he's
true.
He's showing them the grapes on the right. He's
they're both
that's
showing them.
That's
they're both showing
him showing the grapes and saying, "Hey,
no, I think this is Moshe."
They don't show.
Yeah,
them.
And they're showing.
Moshe
and
okay, right. Okay, could be that's Moshe.
A joy in
right,
this.
Could be Moshe. Could be right.
He's pointing
right.
to the grapes, yeah, and they're showing him the grapes.
And then in the on the left also we see something which we don't see on the right. On the left. We see four other groups of people or individual people, right, carrying other stuff, right? On the left, on the Dore picture, on the Dore picture, you have the people on top of this little mound holding up the grapes, and then you have four other groups, one group of two, and then three other individuals also carrying some fruit.
Orange.
Okay, and unclear what it is.
Yeah.
And then on the right, we don't see that except we see one person on his knees holding some sort of fruit in.
I think it's oranges.
And I don't think it's oranges. I don't think there were oranges in Eretz Yisrael at that time. No.
Only because of the art kind of style.
Well,
on the right, it's the style that depicts the faces. More.
No, but on the he could have the person
yeah,
the on the
general,
no, they could have done it either way. I mean, on the right, he could have depicted more Miraglim carrying more fruit. He just chose
maybe
not
just
to.
Maybe just the way he
just
the face
He maybe, just chose not to, but okay.
Maybe that's the way they each read it differently.
So let's that's the question. Let's see which one is closest to the reading of the text. Right, that's what we're here to do.
I think there's a time difference.
Oh, okay. What's the time difference?
Well, if that's Moshe, he hasn't gone up that rock.
No, the Moshe was
okay.
This
it's
one.
Okay. Let's one at a time. One at a time. I didn't. Go ahead, Elisheva. Elisheva, go ahead.
Are you? Well, he's still not quite there. Whereas
right.
Here he's up on with them, so they're more worried because this looks like a very imposing kind of reprimand.
Okay.
I agree.
Oh, you think he's reprimanding them,
yes,
Moshe?
Because he hasn't got. He might be on his way up.
Yes. What are you complaining?
The left one is pre-complaining, and the right one is post-complaining.
Okay. Great. This is all excellent.
Right.
Let's check it out. So first of all. These are all excellent suggestions. Let's now try to understand the relationship between these pictures and the text. So first of all, to whom did Bnei Yisrael give the report about what they saw? Okay, so in the picture, as far as we can tell, on the left, the report, here's the stuff we found. All of Bnei Yisrael are there.
Yeah.
Okay. But on the right, it seems that the report is being given directly to Moshe. If we look at the text, we see on page 312, we could start with verse 25. Vayashuvu mitur haaretz miketz arba'im yom. At the end of 40 days, they returned from scouting the land. Vayelchu vayavo el Moshe. V'el Aharon, v'el kol adat b'nei Yisrael. They went straight to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community. Via, right? And they told them what happened. Right? So it seems, certainly at first glance, that the Doré portrayal of what was going on, which is the picture on the left, seems to be more in step with the actual text. Right, because it says in the text that all of Bnei Yisrael were part of this initial report, which is how the picture depicts it. The picture on the right by Lanfranco, right? There's the Bnei Yisrael are absent, right? They're not there at all. There seems to be a very close contact between the Meraglim, right? The spies, the scouts themselves, and Moshe.
But that could be a close up. You don't know what's going on in the rest of the line.
Okay,
close up.
So. Now, let's read the rest of the Pasuk, because the rest of the Pasuk may... There's another way to read this Pasuk, right? It could be, V'yelchu v'yavo el Moshe v'yel Aaron. First they told Moshe and Aaron, v'el Bnei Yisrael, and maybe then they told Bnei Yisrael. So maybe the picture on the right also has a case to be made that first the report was given to Moshe and Aaron. And in fact, if you read the pasuk further, it says, "El Midbar Paran Kadesha." Right? They went straight to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the wilderness of Paran. Vayashivu otam davar ve'et kol ha'eda, and they made their report to them and to the whole community. So, where does the whole community? Right? It seems redundant. Right? They went to the first half of the pasuk says they went to Moshe and Aaron and the whole community of Israel. And then it says, and they reported to them and to the whole community. So it's unclear, from the Pasuk at least, if the report was to Moshe and Aaron and Bnei Yisrael all at the same time, or Moshe and Aaron, and then after that, to Bnei Yisrael. Right? It's not 100% clear. I think both pictures can make, like I said, can make a claim for authenticity. In terms of how we are to read it could have been two stages in the reporting of what they said, one to Moshe and Aaron, and then one to Bnei Yisrael. So it's not 100% clear, even in the text is exactly what happened. Yes, Elisheva.
If they managed to get all that fruit, how could it be so scary?
We'll get there. We'll have to read the report.
Okay,
we'll get there. Okay, good question. Next. We also have a question as to what was the purpose of the Bnei Yisrael going? What was the purpose of these Meraglim going in to begin with to check out the Eretz Yisrael? What was the purpose?
Okay. One is to see if it's safe, if there's no hostility there, if they'll
And the other
one is just to show the fruit of the land.
Right. Ah, okay. So that's excellent. So I think Shul's making a good point. There's a dual purpose. Now, by the way, this story is repeated again in the book of Devarim with some significant differences and distinctions. And some have suggested that the Bamidbar story really focuses more on Shula's second point, that the reason why the spies were sent were sort of as a scouting mission to come back and say, look at all this beautiful fruit. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. It's wonderful. It's going to be a great life there. In fact, if you read the text, right, it says on top of page 312, "Vayishlach otam Moshe latur et eretz Kenan." Right, Moses sent them to scout the land of Canaan, go up there into the Negev, onto the hill country, and see what kind of country it is. Are the people who dwell in there strong or weak, few or many? Is the country in which they dwell in good or bad? Are they towns, live in open, fortified? Is the soil rich or poor? Is it wooded or not? And take pains to bring back some of the fruit of the land. Right? It doesn't sound 100%. There are some elements of it, but they're not 100% clear that this is a military mission. They want to know if they're strong or weak. But the rest of the focus is how's the soil? Bring back the fruit, right? You can make the argument that in the Bamidbar section, right, there's much more of a focus they want to go and to encourage B'nai Israel to move there. There are other elements of it, but that is the majority. Majority focus. In Devarim, it's actually a little bit different. In Devarim, I'll show you in a second. Hold on one second. In Devarim, we have a little bit of a different take. In Devarim, it seems that the purpose is to determine the route of conquest, as opposed to understand just what the land is. Let's look in the first chapter of Devarim, which is on page 373. Okay. And it says, where's the Pasuk? I can't. Hold on one second. The pasuk says, it says, "Vayachperu lanu et haaretz, vayashivu otanu davar et haderech asher naaleba, ve'et haarim asher navo alehen."
Which pasuk?
The specific direction. In Bamidbar, in Devarim, I'll find the exact pasuk in a second. In Devarim, that they are supposed to specifically try to go and find exactly. You found it, Dov?
Yeah. It's here's
where it is.
Tetvav.
22.
Yeah, on
22.
It talks about appointing
the
people.
Then all of you come, let us here to reconnoiter the land and bring back word on Ruth. 22.
Yeah, here it is, 22, right, Chafbet, on page 374. Yeah. Then all of you came to me and said, let us send men ahead to reconnoiter the land for us and bring back word on the route we shall follow and the cities will come up to. So there's much more clarity. It's much clearer and more obvious that was a military attempt. So now I think it also helps us understand.
Wait a minute, just the two words. Reconnoiter is a military thing.
The land we should go in to take it.
No, so I'm just saying, but this is a much more military
right,
command.
Right, exactly.
Because of the word.
Of course.
I don't get that it's.
In Devarim?
Because
look in Devarim.
That's it.
Right, but then they also. But what else? Is the land fertile? Is it not fertile?
Okay.
Bring back fruit. So in the there is this other element in Bamidbar, which could be also be understood to be talking about a way to encourage them. And not everyone understands, by the way, whether they are big and strong as a military thing. Meaning, what they're asking is it a good land to live in? Are the people there strong or weak? Are they healthy or not healthy? Right? It's not necessary, right? What kind of cities do you live in there? Right? What's about? So it's not necessarily, there's another way to read the section in even those words in Bamidbar, rather than being military. The question of strong or weak is not necessarily a military question. It could also be a general question. Is this a good place to bring up kids, right? Are the kids going to have fresh air? Are the people strong or weak, right? So now, if that's true, right, I'm not sure we convinced Shula, but if that's true, right, we could also understand the difference in the psukim, right? Because if they're going there to encourage the pictures, right, if they're going there to encourage everyone, then it makes sense that everyone's part of the report. On the left, look, we found fruit. It's great. It's going to be a great place to live. The people there are healthy. We're going to go in there. We're going to be able to live a wonderful, wonderful life. That makes sense to share with everyone. And that's the picture on the left. The picture on the right may be indicating that the purpose was, in this artist's mind, more of the Devarim. This is a military discussion. You're not going to have a military discussion with everybody. I'm only going to have a military discussion with the boss, with the general and the boss. The boss is Moshe, right? Moshe is the one who's in charge. So the picture also may depict a different understanding of what the entire mission was. If the mission was to encourage B'nai Israel, then they should all be part of the conversation. If the mission was to really spy it out, to figure out, as it says in Devarim, what's the best way to conquer the land, what's the best route to go into, and then we're going to come back, we're going to talk about it. You're not going to broadcast your battle plan to the entire nation. You're going to just tell the people who are in charge. So it could be that each picture depicts a different understanding of what the mission was for. Elisheva.
I think if you were having a battle talk in front, you'd put your grapes down. They look very heavy. And so the fact that he's included the grapes, I think...
Meaning this is the beginning of the conversation. We're coming. We're only going to speak to you, Moshe, because we have something to say, only to you. You're right. Maybe they would put it down afterwards, but this is
the first slide.
Right. This is right.
The first slide.
Right. It's the first slide. And then we're going to only talk to you, as opposed to the other one where everyone's involved. Okay. Now, what about this? What about the question that you all noticed this? What about the question of triumph or sadness, right? On the picture on the left, there seems to be a sense of triumph. Moshe maybe is pointing. Look at this wonderful stuff. If that's Moshe in the background,
he's
right?
He's got a staff. Isn't
right?
that supposed to be
look
Moshe?
Look
like,
at this wonderful stuff.
Like Charlton Heston?
Right? and as opposed to, right, this is great. As opposed to on the right, the painting, the color painting, where there seems to be, certainly on the eyes of the Meraglim, right, a lot of concern. So let's read the psukim, because the psukim should give us some insight. So let's go back to page 312. They come back, this is verse 25. At the end of the 4 days, they return. Vayelchu v'yavol Moshe v'Aaron v'yalkol dat bnei Yisrael el midbar paran kadesh v'yashivu otam davar v'kol eda v'yar'um et pri ha'aretz. So the first thing they do is they show them the fruit of the land. Okay? This is what they said. We came to the land you sent us to. It does indeed flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. So far, seems to be a happy report. Right? However,
Ephes.
We're going to get to that Ephes in a second. That Ephes is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean nothing.
So zero.
No, it doesn't mean zero.
Yeah.
It's the Ramban, we're going to see.
However.
Right? However, the people who inhabit the country are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the Anakites there. Amalekites dwell in the Negev region, etc., etc. Now, so far, right, so far, there's no indication at all. Even after this report, they don't say, and we can't do it yet. They say, this is the situation. There's great produce there. And there also happens to be a very strong nation there, other people there who live in fortified cities. Kalev, in verse 30,
Vayahas Kalev et Ha'am. Kalev hushed the people before Moses and said, let us by all means go up, and we shall gain possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it. So Kalev here now sensing a turn, right? If he lets these people go on talking this way, what's going to happen? Right? The people are going to be nervous. So Kalev tries as best as he can to shut it down, but it doesn't work. In 31, Vanashim Asher Alu Imo, the people have gone up with him, with Kalev, Amru, Lo Nuchal La'alot El Ha'am Ki Chazak Hu Mimenu. We cannot go up and attack the people. They are stronger. Vayotziu Dibat Ha'aretz Asher Taru Ota. And then they took the next step, which is then they started spreading the word around to everyone else, right? Thus they spread calumnies among the Israelites about the land they had scouted, saying, the country that we traversed and scouted is one that devours its settlers. All the people that we saw in are men of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, and the Anakites are part of the Nephilim, and we look like grasshoppers to ourselves, and so we must have looked to them.
Interesting.
So there's definitely a change in mood, right? There's definitely a change in mood. At the beginning of the mood, at the beginning, though, it seems this is wonderful. It's a great land, other people there. And then at one point, there's a definite turning point in the mood of this report. So if you look at the Ramban, right, we see a couple of interesting things. Actually, I need one of the packets. Can I have one of the packets?
Here.
So first of all, the Ramban says there is definitely a turning point in this section, and is the word Ephes in verse 28. Because if you look in the Ramban on page 1 of the packet, he says, and surely it floweth milk and honey. Since Moses had commanded them to see what the land is, whether it was fat or lean, the spies reported to him that it is fat, and surely it is flowing milk and honey. And the answer to his question, whether there are trees there or not, they reported him, and this is its fruit, right? There are trees. And so he commanded them to show it. Now in all that they said the truth, and gave a report about those matters which they had been commanded to find out. Therefore, they should indeed have said, as in fact they did, that the people that dwell in the land are fierce, and the cities are fortified. For it was their duty to bring back the word of truth that sent them. So this is the Ramban saying, this is page 1, where Moshe says, bring back the report, and they should have brought back just the facts. So far, so good. It's a land of flowing with milk and honey. This is the fruit. Everything's good. And also the facts are that Amalek is there and there are other people there. However, right? And Moses commanded them to see where they are strong or weak and what cities they dwell in. But the wickedness of the spies consisted in saying the word Ephes. Nevertheless, meaning, what did the spies do wrong here in the Ramban? They didn't lie.
They just omitted.
No. Now they started analyzing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Moshe didn't ask them to analyze. Right, it's his job to analyze. Right. He's the analyst. They are supposed to collect the facts, the data. The data is there's great fruit, cities, lots of other people. Now Moshe has to decide. Right, that's all true. That's all true. Moshe is supposed to analyze. But now they start analyzing. Ephes. Nevertheless, the people that dwell in the land are fierce, which signifies something negative and beyond human capability. Not only did they start analyzing, they did it in a way which was to create panic. The word Ephes, the Ramban says, is a very loaded word, right? It means it's impossible. Like Ephes, like zero. It's nothing. It's impossible. There's no chance, which signifies something negative and beyond human capability, something impossible of achievement under any circumstances. Page 2.
It's not only that.
It seems to be more than that. Sure. Similar to the expression, ha'efes la'netzach chasdo.
Uh-huh.
Is his mercy clean, gone forever? And there is no one else, efes, but God. Thus the spies told Moshe that the land is fertile and surely it flows milk and honey, and the fruits are good, but it is impossible to fight against the people because they are fierce and the cities are fortified and very great, and moreover, we saw the children were not there. So that was the turning point. So it's interesting in the picture. It could be, right, that
they got the Ephes.
Right? On the right, they're giving Moshe the Ephes.
Right.
Right? They're giving Moshe the Ephes. On the left,
This is
the beginning.
By the way, this could be on the left. You may even want to say maybe it's not Moshe. This is maybe Kalev saying, mm-hmm. "We can do this, right? We can do this, right?" As Vayahas Kalev, he tried to hush them. Let us by all means go up. We could gain possession of it, right? Let's do it.
Well, it's the way Ellie said. The first picture is before the people react negatively. Before that, it could be right after they say it.
Right. I think you're right, though. I think the first picture is the coming back and saying, look what we have found. And then after that, the Meraglim then add saying, Ephes. Right? I think the one on the left is pre-Ephes. The one on the right, it's hard to know. It's hard to say, but I think the one on the left, right, the black and white picture, I'll show the people watching on Facebook again. I think this is a pre-FS picture, right, where everyone is very triumphant. And this one, you see the Meraglim are very, very scared and nervous about what's going on. And then, of course, the Ramban points out that they, on page three, one other important point, right, and they brought forth Dibat, an evil report of the land which they had spied out unto the children of Israel. The meaning of this is that the spies left Moses and Aaron and went around saying in the people's tent that it is a land that eateth up its inhabitants.
This is the Ramban, right?
This is the Ramban, yeah. For at first, when they spoke to the people in front of Moses and Aaron, saying the land flowed milk and honey, but the people are fierce, and Kalev said, for we are well able to overcome it, the people hesitated between the two opinions. And there were some of them who still trusted in their power and strength, and some of them who trusted in the help of the Eternal Almighty against the mighty. Then the spies spread the evil report in front of the people themselves. That's also not so much part of the picture, but that's a very interesting strategy that the Meraglim used. When the Meraglim just reported to Moshe, they said, we're not going to be able to do this. Kalev tries to quiet them down and say, we can. And then the Meraglim realize that really the way that they're going to convince everyone that they're right is they have to go in, they got to go into the people. And once you speak to a few people and start spreading the rumor, then it's going to spread like wildfire, and we're going to win the day.
With the word Ephes, it's not anymore description; it's already opinion.
Right, exactly. It's an analysis. It's an opinion, which was not what they were asked to do.
Analyze. You can say the same thing.
What is the word milk and honey? Flows from milk and honey? Is that from another
place?
Yeah. No. But is it the first time you see here?
Well, this is the source.
I'm wondering why milk and honey versus
because that's what it was.
Milk and sugar or milk.
No, there was no sugar. Honey is date honey. It's date honey.
Yeah, I know.
That's what it means. Because that's what there was. That's what there was no. That's what they saw.
I'm just curious why those two words.
Because that's what they saw.
Is some milk from the cows?
Yeah.
Honey from the bees?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what they're reporting. You're reporting back their that's real the picture. Okay.
Same thing
next. Let's look now what they're carrying. Let's look now what they're carrying. Okay? If we look at the section of what they were carrying in their hands. This is in Pasuk 23, okay, on page 312. Vayavo anachal eshkol, vayichvertu misham zimora, ve'eshkol anavim, echad. They reached the Wadi Eshkol, and there they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes. It had to be borne on a carrying frame by two of them. Vayisa'uhu bamot bishnayim. Umin harimonim, umin hateinim. So we see, right? They brought pomegranates and figs, and they also brought grapes. Now let's look at the two pictures. Okay, in picture number on the left, there are two groups of two people carrying clusters of grapes. One of them is on top of the mountain, that little mound, and one of them is right behind them. Everyone see that?
To the left.
It's not figs.
Well, maybe
it's not figs.
Okay. And maybe then on the right, you just see one group of two carrying the grapes.
Right.
But he's got he might have a pomegranate in his hand.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the pomegranate. I'm talking about the grapes. I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing on the grapes. Okay? So the grapes, we have one group of people carrying grapes on the right. And two groups of people carrying grapes on the left. So what is the
the more honest depiction of the psukim.
One on the right. This is just one cluster.
Just one cluster.
So it's unclear, right? Because the text is ambiguous. It says "Vayisa'uhu bamot bishnayim," which could mean what we had, or it could also mean it could mean either that two men were carrying one pole, or that there were two separate poles, right? It was carried. The two poles were carried by one person, or there were two poles carried by two people. It's unclear. And in fact, if we look at the Gemara, which is in the packet I gave you, right? There's a whole slew of opinions as to exactly what and how the Meraglim brought back the stuff. Look on page 5, on the bottom of page 5. From here, you can calculate the size of the cluster of grapes that the spies carried together from Eretz Yisrael, as it is stated in our pasuk, and they carried it upon a pole between two. So does it mean two poles? Between two poles, two people, right?
No, it says a pole.
From the fact that it is stated that they carried the cluster of grapes on a pole, do I not know that it was carried by two people? That is the only way it can be carried on a pole. What is the meaning when the verse states between two? It means that the spies carried it on two poles. And four people carried the cluster of grapes together. From here, it can be deduced that the weight of the cluster was 4 and 8. That's not important. Now look at the next page. So it's unclear, right? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, tortani v'tortani d'tortani. Rabbi Yitzchak said, they were configured like upper rods of scales. That's tortani is a Greek word, if you see on the left where it says the language there, that are balanced on the lower rods of scales. They were not two, but four poles. How so? Eight of the spies carried the cluster of grapes, one of them carried a pomegranate, and one carried a fig. Yehoshua and Caleb did not carry anything. Why didn't they carry anything? Either because they were prominent or they didn't want to participate in the negative council. But you see, there are different versions, based on how you understand this Gemara and the Psukim, of exactly how stuff was carried, right? The classical picture of the Israeli tourism agency, right, is more like it's in these pictures. Yes, that's right. But that's not how the Gemara necessarily sees it. And it's unclear whether it was two poles being carried between two people or it's either two men were carrying one pole or that there were two separate poles. It's not 100% clear. If it was two separate poles, then you have the picture on the left. If it was one pole, and we see that on the picture on the right. So that's also interesting. And on the left, we see more of a representation of people carrying other things. Mm-hmm. On the right, we have one person who seems to be holding a pomegranate or some other type of fruit in his hand on the right. But on the left, it's much clearer. On the left, you definitely see people carrying, you know, branches or sticks with other produce tied to them.
What is it carrying on the right? A stick.
It's. I mean, the pasuk says that they also carried pomegranates and figs. So presumably,
no, he's holding a stick.
Yeah, but
a branch.
No, that's the eshkol.
So it was one.
On that picture, it's one. Exactly. Right. Now look at this also. What about the last point, right? How big were the fruit? Right? So both artists depict huge clusters of grapes.
Right.
Huge. Right? But the other fruit that they portray are normal. Basically normal. If that's a pomegranate in the guy's hand, it's a normal pomegranate. And the other people on the left carrying fruit, they don't need help. And the fruit, you see little balls, right? It looks like it's normal size, right? So what's going on here? Why are the grapes gigantic that require two people to carry a cluster, and the other fruit are normal?
It says it requires.
Why? The question is why? Why were the question is yes, but why were the grapes so big that they required two people? But the pomegranates were normal size.
Maybe they brought more grapes than the other fruit.
So one answer is right. So one answer could be this is not a question of the size. It's the question of the amount. They brought back a larger
or more clusters of grapes than they brought back pomegranates. So that's why they needed two people to carry it. The other suggestion is this notion of nishtana hateva, right? That nature has changed over time, and maybe back then grapes were gigantic.
Maybe
right? There's two ways to look at it.
Maybe the emphasis on grapes because it has a ritual inclination.
No, it's not the question of why they're emphasizing. The question is why did they need two people to carry one cluster of grapes? So that but that suggests that the grapes weren't bigger; they just brought back more.
That's what it looks like to me.
Right, right. They just brought
maybe
back more.
Maybe they were just the staple fruit of the land.
It could be they just brought. So one answer could be is that the nature has changed, right? Or that the grapes that they had were more like the grapes that we had, and they just brought back a lot more grapes than they brought back anything else. From this picture, you know, you can't really tell. But you can tell is that the grapes sort of overpower the picture, which is also more based on the Pesukim.
Could it also be just the artist because it does, you know, how
no, because the Pesukim say that they
had a pole with grapes.
Two people to carry.
Yeah, the minimum. The Pesukim more. Focus more, yeah, it seems to be that. But yes, okay. Alicia.
So why are we being told that the fruit and everything is so, you know, like impressive? Why are we giving that contrast that everything's so, if they didn't want to go back, the spies, and they intended making that analysis that the people were too large and fierce beings, why then would they show all this?
Because Moshe told them to. That's what Moshe told them to do. Moshe said.
Wouldn't they in their heads think, well, that's a contradiction, isn't it? Like, on the one hand, we're going to show you how wonderful the land is. On the other hand, we're saying don't go there, it's too scary.
That's the whole
right,
idea.
Right, so two things. It could be both. It could be very plentiful and wonderful, but also inconquerable. That's possible. Just because there's lots of yummy grapes doesn't mean you can conquer it.
Yes, but human nature.
So I'm saying no. So they're not contradictory.
No?
No, they're not. It's two separate physical facts. One is there's lots of food there, and the other is we're never going to get it because there's too many people. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that they had Yoshua and Kalev with them, right, who were the good guys. Moshe told them, go back and bring us back specimens of what's there. So you're right, had it not been for Yoshua and Kalev, maybe they wouldn't have brought back any fruit. And they would have said, there's nothing there. But they couldn't do that because Yoshua and Kalev were there. Yoshua and Kalev were sort of keeping their eye on them. So that's why they had to do this other plan, which is, oh, look, there's all this great stuff, Ephes, but doesn't matter. We're not going to get it. And then they go into the people and they start to spread their, their debat ra'ah.
Ephes could, it sounds like it could be, but it's meaningless, right?
No chance.
Ephes is zero.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything because we can't get it anyway.
Right, exactly. Right. Okay, but you're right, Elisheva, you really raise a good point. They really had to overcome the fact that at first, it's like if you would pause between the two halves of the report, it seems like B'nai Yisrael would be really excited to finally go in there because milk and honey, all this wonderful fruit. And then they had to overcome the positive impression that they themselves created in order to establish
Isn't
panic.
That exactly what happens
right.
here?
Rabbi Elisheva is raising a good question. Why would we give them, why would we say something positive? Also, by the way,
because the negative,
because
the negative could be a little softened by the positive.
Right, it could also be like when you go to a parent-teacher conference and the teacher wants to tell you that
your kid's
terrible. It says, "Oh, your kid, you know, shows up on time and eats lunch nicely, but can't count, read, or write." Right. So if everything's bad, you're not going to believe them. So you got to give them something good to believe in, and then
the same thing here.
If they would have come back and said there's nothing good about this land, they should have been like, wait a second, God promised us this land, he told us we're going to go there, and there's nothing good about it, you guys must be missing something. So they give them, you know, they give them a sense of, oh, you could believe us because look, we're telling you the truth about how wonderful the land is, and therefore you should also believe us that it's impossible for us. So it's a psychological trick that they use.
Could be possible they didn't want to tick off God. God told them this was a good land.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but God also told them they could conquer it.
But they saw beforehand that if you go against God, bad things happen to you.
Yeah, it could be. But God also told them they could conquer it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah.
They said they'll have to fight for
right. There is this notion, right, that people who you're more likely to buy something or believe someone when you like them. So the Meraglim come and they want to make themselves likable to B'nai Yisrael. So they give them a very positive report. And now that you like me and you believe me, I'm going to lower the boom. So it could have been a number of different explanations as to why, but that's a great question, Elisheva. You know, why set themselves up for potential failure? But the answer I like best is they were being policed. And had they
been
policed by Kalev and Yehoshua.
Oh.
But I also think that it's, like you say, when you go to a teacher's conference, you know, you have to give them something good. You can't say everything is bad. I mean, you come to, you know, when we used to come to Houston, they told us it was hot. That's all we heard. Houston is hot.
Right, it's like the joke when you go into a kosher restaurant, the waiter comes to the table and says, is anything okay?
Yes.
Right? So they had to say something was okay. Right? All right, everyone. That's